not going to allow you to introduce yourself. Going to take up the time, but perhaps we can just get a sense of which institutions are here. I know the department is obviously here. Which sections of the department is here? Who's leading the department team?
I am.
All right. Just quickly introduce your team.
Okay, I'm Norma Tabakela.
Is your mic not working?
Oh,
okay.
All right. Yeah, my name is Norma Tabakela. I'm the chief director for social welfare services transformation at the National Department.
I'm Lucene Donatello, Chief Director, Legal Services. I'm also with that lady sitting right there, is Yamohete Dube. She's our intern.
I'm Osborne Matilela, Chief Director, Entity and Oversight Management.
I'm Kotikara Yamohete Dube, Director, Pastor Fadini, Central Drug Authority, National
Alright, is that the full team?
We also have members of the CBA.
David Baylor, I'm the Deputy Chairperson of the Central Drug Authority, and I also have with me Dr. Ray Ebelheim, an Executive Member of the Central Drug Authority, behind me.
I'm Ivodi Yamabuza Mukoko, CDA Secretary.
Is that about it?
Yes.
All right. Which other teams are here? We have got members of the portfolio committee. My name is Michael Matita. I chair the committee. And the other members, can they just quickly, if some people are meeting the committee for the first time, they need to know who the faces are.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Vince Lander from KwaZulu-Natal, Chair of the Tech, member of the portfolio committee.
All right.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Dennis Semple. I'm a member of the committee, and I'm from Ekurhuleni, Gauteng.
Yeah. I know Mark Gumede, and I met her in the public, and they're on stage. She was on her way, so I hope she'll join us. Secretary, do we have any apologies from members?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Zola Vice, the committee secretary. The apologies for today is for Honorable Mkongi, Honorable Mark, Honorable Rajbali, and Honorable Abu Kubane Zulu.
All right.
Thank you.
Any other people who are visiting us who we need to know about their presence?
Frankie Jenkins, Parliamentary Legal Advisor. I've been assigned to assist the committee with this piece of
information. Who else? We have the State Law Advisor's office here. All right. Before we proceed with the business of today, I just need us to briefly reflect on the program of the committee for the week. We have scheduled students come to the prevention and treatment of the introduction of the prevention and treatment of substance abuse bill today, which, as you know, is our key legislative task for this year. We have had a lot of discussion with programming and many other authorities in Parliament around the need for us to shrink the program of the committee such that we are able to, Parliament as a whole, is able to conclude this legislation in our current political life. As you know, we're going into elections next year, and if we can't get this one through, we won't be able to add it to our CVs when we apply for jobs next year, when we become unemployed. So it is critical for us to look at the program as proposed and possibly look at how we're going to apply ourselves in such a way that we're able to finish the legislation. The general structure of the program is that, I think the secretary will get copies out. But is that next week we're going to have public hearings on this book by the trustee bed. I think the secretary will have to update us as to how many comments have we received thus far. I think the closing date was yesterday or today, I can't remember. And also to get a sense of how many organizations have indicated that they would want to come and talk to us next week. Alright. Did I see somebody raising a hand? No. Alright. Okay. But after that, obviously the research unit is going to collect all of that and package it nicely for us as we normally do. And we're going to go through every comment that we receive from the public and apply our minds and decide what we accept and what we reject. And give instructions to the drafters to go and effect our amendment. Now, we envisage a situation where this bill has implications for more than one department, for more than social services. So when we get the department to respond to the issues arising from the public hearing, we'd appreciate if we could get the other departments the co-spouses to this baby who have contributed in parenting this baby to also be there to respond to those issues that affect their department directly. Because we don't want social development to be a false practice for health and safety and security. If we have to bring the police here to come and tell us how they respond to assertions that they're not doing enough to fight, the gangsters who are peddling drugs in the township, we have to call them here to speak for themselves. So that's the approach we're going to take. So let's look at it and see up front which department we like to have to bring in that come. But the idea is that before the end of next month, this bill must be passed by the Assembly. If we have any chance to have it through the NCOP and also to allow for a possibility of mediation in the case that the NCOP bring their own amendment as well. So we'll look further at the issue of the program going forward. I'm just giving an overview of the structure and the way we need to program to unfold. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be dealing with the Social Assistance Amendment Bill. As you are aware, it deals with two issues. The one is to reduce the age for men to qualify for the old age grant from 65 eventually to 60, placed over a period of 3 years. The intention is to have that bill go through tomorrow. So we budgeted for only one day. We think it's fairly straightforward, it's one page. And yeah, the second aspect of it relates to the setting up of a tribunal that's going to review rejected applications and other complaints from applicants for social grants. As you know, the Act provides for the minister to establish the tribunal or to consider appeals directly. So, now, I think the department wants to institutionalize the whole thing of the tribunal. I've raised issues with Ms. Maluka, I'm not sure if she's here, relating to the way in which it's formulated there, because I think it needs to be fine-tuned a bit. I hope that the legal section, I'll have a chat with them after, can come with the amendment ready already tomorrow, so that we don't send them back and come back again, because that's money going directly to people's pockets. The price of food is going up and electricity and everything else. So the sooner that law can go through Parliament so that people can start getting on the ground. But there's one aspect as well. I know the special advisor is here. The department has recommended that that bill be dealt with the Section 75 law, which will take a much shorter period. The state law advisors in their wisdom have decided to overrule the department and insist that it's a 75. Now, the matter is before the Joint Standing Committee. Upon getting to know about this on Thursday, I spoke to the Secretary of the National Assembly and offered to make submit a written opinion. I've submitted a 7-page legal opinion over the weekend opposing the state law advisor's position because I believe it's legally and constitutionally incorrect. But that's a matter that would need to be resolved by joint taking, hopefully in our favor, because if it's a 76 bill, then it means it's going to be a much longer process, because it's a 6-week cycle period that it has to go through in the NCOP for them to get mandates and all of that. So it is important that you correct the mistake. But hopefully we'll get an opportunity to go and contest this issue before the joint session. But that's just the latest insofar as that aspect. I know members want me to report on what happened with our trip to Brazil. Just to indicate that after a long and hard sleepless night battle, we were almost on our way, as you recall. But unfortunately, our host backtracked and decided that they're not ready to receive us on those days. Both our Cuban host and our Brazilian host. Yes. What was happening in Cuba, incidentally, was that the department has a program in terms of a bilateral agreement with Cuba for the training of young people to become social work practitioners or something of that nature. Now, the whole skills shortage problem in the country relating to social work. So the department has a bilateral agreement with Cuba for that kind of training. So they had a whole full session with them that particular week. So there was a clash. And as a result of that clash, it defeated our plan. Brazil, the following week, or the week before, I think they were going to host a delegation led by the speaker. And the following week, when we were supposed to be there, they were having youth celebration, and they saw that they're not going to be able to give attention to us because there'll be a lot of hype and activity in Rio and everywhere else we wanted to go. We've requested Parliament to postpone the trip, or to allow us to postpone the trip to the beginning of July. Chances are that this bill will still be navigating through the parliamentary system, and therefore the trip will still be relevant. And apparently the response that I have from the committee is that this has not been approved yet, pending how we fare with this bill. So we've been, again, held to ransom. I know the sponsor has indicated that they need an urgent indication from Parliament as to whether they should postpone or not, because that would mean rolling over the funds. So again, we're caught between the hard rock and the rock and the hard rock again. And the sad thing is that this legislation will be passed shortly before the beginning of July, and by that time it will be too late to be flying from the government if the approval will only happen after it passes. So, yeah, I don't know what else to say, but that's as far as we could take. All right, that's insofar. I don't know if there's anything that is important that I needed to report on before we proceed with our business. We also, the ITU, those that attended this, some of us were quite involved there. And, yeah, interesting things came through there. But we'll report on some of those things on another occasion. Well, finally, just to mention that due to the sloppiness in the programming processes within Parliament, our report on Vote 17, Social Development, for last year, and that was adopted by this committee on the 18th of March, 2007, only finding its way into the House for adoption, formal adoption, tomorrow, a year later, more than a year. I'm going to speak for 5 minutes on that report. It actually contained a number of recommendations from this committee that are very pertinent to issues such as fiscal arrangements between national and provincial, you know, improvement in service delivery. So it is very important in terms of the recommendations. And that's one of the issues I think we're going to have to be sharp with the book to say once the committee adopts it, it should speedily find its way into the parliament so that the recommendations can actually be implemented as a matter of urgency. We also have a situation where the report we passed last year on the oversight trip we did on substance abuse, if you recall, we visited a number of treatment centers, etc., which also contained recommendations, was sold in the committee section. Some official had certain reservations about certain things. And after struggling to meet with her, I eventually met her 2 months ago, and only to find that her objections are completely unfounded. And I really feel that the committee section should guard against the situation where once the committee, which is us, the politicians, in our wisdom, decides that this is what we're going to report on. You know, there are no interceptions that are not acceptable and not justified, you know, that unnecessarily delay the process of Parliament. But on that note, after moaning and groaning, I think it's back to business. I will straight away give over to the department to present what they're going to present for today. Oh, before you do that, the other thing that I forgot to announce is that we've also asked the department tomorrow, after we have finished with the bill, social assistance, to also present this draft regulations that have been awaited since donkey year, since we passed the Social Assistance Act in 2004. We want a progress report tomorrow. We know that they are are now going to be including the issue of raising the age for qualification for the child support grant. I don't know from what age to what age, but we'll hear from them tomorrow. And they'll probably be reviewing the minister for the oldest grant. I don't know for what other grants as well, probably child support as well. And possibly a few other policy issues that are important. So we felt that because they are all interrelated with social assistance and then their role, although they're not contained in the law, they should be presented together. So we'll get to hear more about that tomorrow morning. All right. Before I give the department an opportunity, is there any point of clarity, any corrections to anything I've said, or any comment that anybody wants to make? Yes, is that the legal section of the department?
Yes, yes. On the initial program, the government has indicated that we'll be here to the police, but this means that we'll only be here to the 7th.
I think that the committee secretary will respond. My understanding is that on Thursday morning, because the caucus, we won't be able to sit. Are we sitting there?
Yes, please.
From 2 o'clock on Thursday, we'll be proceeding. Are we sitting this afternoon?
Yes.
Are we sitting today until 5? And tomorrow, 10 till 5 again. And Thursday, 2 to 5. So that is the program for the week. Are you up for the challenge, madam? All right. Ms. Sample, how does the DA feel?
Yes, Jay, certainly we're up for the challenge. I think our long sessions last year certainly proved that this committee can work very hard. I'd just like to check, do we have permission to not be at the plenary this week?
Apparently we have been granted permission. If there's voting, the bells will ring and we'll quickly run and abandon everybody in the middle of whatever and go and vote and come back. Alright. And we've got meals organized and couches and beds and people to take massages and alright. Okay. Right. Yes.
Just a follow up on the date of the 8th. What are we doing for
Let's get the actual program printed out so that everybody has sight of it. But essentially, we're seeing this thing spilling over to each other. We're starting with substance abuse, finish substance abuse, go straight into social assistance. We have to pass social assistance this week, I guess, if not tomorrow. And once we finish the social assistance, we go into regulations under social assistance. All right? Finish with regulations, and we also want to get the department to update us on the litigation situation in the department. I read the judgment on proclamation. What's that judgment? But that judgment indicates that in KwaZulu-Natal alone between 2000 and 2005 or 2006, there were something like 26,000 cases relating to social grants between the Maritzburg and the Durban Court of Law that they challenged, you know, issues relating to that. So it's a very crazy. We need to get an update on what is that. All right. That's more or less. It's going to be a very fluid situation. So we can't be efficient say that we have done the rest of it. But now the officials from the department know that they're here to camp this week in Cape Town. I hope you brought a big luggage case with you because they're going to be stuck at hand. All right. Any other matter before we proceed? All right. We seem to have taken care of the business. The department is your show now. All all the work that you put into the bomb. It's a very big job. Please go ahead. We've had an informal briefing on the bomb, but now we're getting an informal briefing. I don't know how you want to deal with it, but my sense is that we may actually need to go through the bomb. Do we have copies of the bomb? Has everybody got a copy? Why don't we distribute copies of it? Maybe we could help with an overview and then just go through the bill itself, clause by clause. Yeah, yes,
I think this is what they do in the presentation.
Thanks, sir. The program on Wednesday reflects that in the morning we conclude any business relating to substance abuse, and in the afternoon there will be a briefing by the department on the social assistance law.
Yeah, and then on Thursday will be the answer.
Yes, on social assistance. On Thursday it will be a briefing on social assistance, progress report on regulations, appeals tribunal, and litigation.
I would prefer a situation where we can deal with, because in any case we're going to be preoccupied with this bill for the better part of the next month. So for today is just to prepare ourselves so that when we get into public hearing tomorrow and next week, we have a fair sense of what this is all about. And of course the role of the CDA is critical so that we understand the practical level. What is the situation? So that when the stakeholders confront us with issues next week, we have a sense of which questions to ask them. But what I want us to do tomorrow is that we must pass the social assistance. Alright? So if we can finish substance abuse today and go straight into social assistance tomorrow, that would be ideal. But let's see as far as we can go. If of course this is still agenda tomorrow morning, we will have to accommodate that. All right.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So in terms of the presentation, as I indicated, we prepared an overview of the bill itself and touched somewhat on the clauses in the bill, but not to we didn't give that much detail in that regard. So we would then present the bill as we have prepared it, and we'll take any questions on clarification or if the House so wishes, we could also go into some detail in relation to certain aspects of the bill. The purpose of the presentation is to brief the Portfolio Committee on the prevention and prevention of and treatment for substance abuse bill. And we have given quite a number of presentations, but as you correctly said, this is the first formal presentation that we're making on the bill. In terms of your request as well, we've given some attention as to why we wanted to review the current legislation, which is the Prevention and Treatment of Drug Dependency Act number 20 of 1992. We found that the act is outdated. It's not responsive to the current challenges that we have in the country in relation to substance abuse. It focuses on center-based treatment and does not give adequate attention to community-based services and also to outpatient services. People have got to be taken to particular treatment centers, and no provision in the bill is made for other forms of treatment, even from those treatment centers from those community treatment centers are located. They don't have outreach programs that reach to communities around them. And we wanted to really change that. And there are gaps in the manner that center-based services are managed. There's no provision for prevention, community-based and outpatient services, and particularly prevention and treatment. And then admission procedures for treatment centers are not user-friendly. As you will know, Chairperson, that most people are excluded. Those that cannot afford treatment are actually excluded and don't receive treatment. And we have very few public facilities which water most of the time full and are not able to address the needs of people, especially in your disadvantaged communities adequately. Coming to the process that we followed in developing this bill, we started with a new policy for substance abuse, which served as a basis for this bill, and then we developed the National Drug Master Plan, which was approved by Parliament, and the National Drug Master Plan is for the period 2006 to 2011. The National Department of Social Development in the process of establishing, developing this bill, established and led a reference group that consisted of representatives from state and private institutions, provincial departments of social development, departments of health initiatives, non-governmental organizations. We had a workshop which involved the reference group and all the other national departments as well as the CDA, and this workshop was held in July 2005. The zero draft bill was workshopped with provinces at a two-day provincial workshop in each province during February and March 2006, and we had written submissions from individuals and from different organizations. And following that, we had another national consultative workshop with all the stakeholders, including the relevant national departments, on the 31st of May and the 1st of June 2006. And other parties that were consulted were the South African Police Services, Department of Justice, Foreign Affairs, Health, and Education. We also consulted the National Youth Commission and South African Revenue Services. We had an informal briefing to the Portfolio Committee on Social Development and the early stages of the development of the bill. And we had advice on the Portfolio Committee, which was taken into consideration in the drafting of the bill. And this included the fact that we have to look at the role of traditional leaders organizations and their involvement. We have to look at the National Arts Council. We have to consult with the National Inter-DMA Council, and this was done and input that was incorporated. And then all submissions that were received were considered by the reference group and the legal drafter that was appointed to assist the department in the drafting of the bill. The bill was publicized for public comment for a period of 21 days, and it was the 26th of January 2007. And inputs that were received from members of the public, private sector, Department of Justice, Health and South African Police Services, and where appropriate, these comments were integrated into the bill. The bill was approved by the Minister for Tabling cabinet members, notably the Minister of Education, Finance, Health and Justice made inputs on the bill, and these were integrated into the bill. And the bill was approved by cabinet. And we also had, on the 27th of February last year, an informal briefing of the Portfolio Committee. The input that we received from the Portfolio Committee was considered and effected under the plate cover because we didn't want to tamper with the bill. It's this version of the bill, but we've taken those into consideration and drafted something that will then be integrated into the later stage into the bill. And this was particularly the issues around, expansion of the section, or rather improvement of the section of community-based services, the issues around the traditional leaders, again, the role of the traditional leaders, and so on and so forth. The bill was certified on the 29th of February 2016. We also considered financial implications of the bill. A preliminary costing of the bill was done by the Human Sciences Research Council. The preliminary costing of the bill has been categorized into three phases as per the request of the National Treasury. And these phases are one, the initiation phase two, transition phase, phase three, full implementation phase. And the costing for each phase was done on three levels. scenario one being the conservative one, which is of course dependent on availability of funds, the scenario two intermediate, and scenario three aggressive implementation. So in the initial phase we had those three scenarios, and for the transition phase again those three scenarios, and then the full implementation those three scenarios, and these scenarios were costed. But what we look at the moment in terms of what we are presenting here is a preliminary financial implication based on the costing of scenario three per phase, which summarized as follows, and these are annual implementation costs. The initial phase is 264 million, transitional phase is 125 million, and full implementation is 375 million. The final costing of the bill will be done when the bill has been considered by the portfolio committee, because we actually contend that some of the input that might come through might have some financial implications, and we will then review the cost of the bill. Coming to the content of the bill, the structure of the bill is such that you have the preamble, and then we have chapter one, which is about definitions and objects of the bill, chapter two, combating of substance abuse, chapter three, prevention of substance abuse, chapter four, community-based services, chapter five, center-based and outpatient services, chapter six, aftercare and reintegration services, chapter seven is on admission, transfer and referral procedures to treatment centers, chapter eight is about behavior management and disciplinary interventions, chapter nine, the central drug authority and supporting structure, chapter 10, monitoring and evaluation, and chapter 11, general provisions. Now, objects of the bill are firstly to create mechanisms to combat substance abuse in a coordinated manner, to create conditions for registration of programs, including those in treatment centers and halfway houses. Thirdly, to create conditions and procedures for admission of persons to and the release of persons from treatment centers, to provide vulnerable persons with any intervention, treatment and reintegration programs, and to establish the Central Drug Authority to monitor and oversee the implementation of the National Drug Master Plan. Chapter 1 looks at definitions and objects of the bill, as I've outlined it. And it also looks at the interpretation of the Act. Chapter 2 looks at combating substance abuse, and it really addresses programs, different programs for combating substance abuse. And it also looks at the development and compliance with minimum norms and standards, that minimum norms and standards would be developed, by noticing the Gazette, these minimum standards will ensure that we are able to delineate the levels of intervention, of levels of intervention that is prevention and intervention, and that services are provided to service users and persons affected by substance abuse. The minimum standards also relate to the protection of children in treatment centers, prevention program for community-based services, for establishment, management, monitoring, and assessment of halfway houses and treatment centers, for the monitoring and assessment of treatment centers and halfway houses, for the registration, monitoring, and evaluation of outpatients, and then the monitoring of and evaluation of the integration program. So that's what this refers to, these minimum standards. These are the areas that we need to consider in the development of minimum standards. And then it also addresses support services delivered by third parties. This is in relation to support that is given to the NGO sector that renders services jointly with departments, with the department, and mainly looks at the issue of subsidization of these, giving financial awards to these organizations that render these services. And it also relates to guiding principles for provision of services. We actually providing for an enabling environment for the delivery of services to ensure that those services are provided in a manner that recognizes the social, cultural, economic, physical, psychological, as well as age and gender requirements of such persons, and ensure that there's access to information regarding the services and prevention of exploitation of people that are addicted to substances, and promote the respect and dignity of persons affected by substance abuse, also promote identification of persons affected by substance abuse in decision making processes regarding their needs and requirements. And then chapter 3 talks to the prevention of substance abuse. It's more about the establishment of services and programs for the prevention of substance abuse. Looks at addressing values, perceptions, etc., that are associated with substances, to develop personal and social skills, to increase capacity for informed decision making and informed choices by people in relation to abuse, to substance abuse. I think that's the main focus of this legislation, that we really want to promote prevention, because there's no way actually that you can build enough plans to cater for everybody, and we rather focus on prevention and as a starting point or as a main focus. The focus of prevention services and programs relate to family preservation and strengthening of intrafamily relationships, so that parents have got an understanding of what happens to their children. If we empower them to be able to communicate better with their children, to understand what is going on in the children's lives, and to be able to recognize symptoms of substance abuse and all those kinds of issues. Promotion of well-being and realization of full potential of every person within the family and in the community as well. I think there's a lot at the moment that is being said in relation to recreational facilities, for instance, that we don't have within our community, how you keep the children busy and away from drugs, and what are the alternatives in relation to substance abuse. If you remove the drug, what do you put in the place of drugs or of substances? And then awareness of the risks that are associated with substance abuse, and then promotion of healthy lifestyle. Again, Chapter 3 deals with the provision of prevention and early intervention services by various stakeholders, and those services will be prescribed by the minister, and they will include compliance with the minimum norms and standards. Chapter 4 deals with community-based services, and I think initially it was quite, as you see, receiving the game itself, it's really scanty, and because we were actually focusing on outpatient services and outreach programs and so on and so forth. But we have subsequently looked at this chapter, and we will be making input to the chapter so that they can improve on it. But this chapter really deals with the establishment of community-based services that include prevention and intervention and treatment services and life skills programs. And in reality, treatment services within the community are possible, because most of the time we remove people, put them in a center, and then afterwards they have to adjust, go back to the very same conditions that they come from, and they just go back to drugs. And there are programs that can be, you know, diversion programs, for instance, where a person can be through, maybe if they commit a crime, they are then sentenced to a community service, or they are sentenced to treatment within the community, and they have to comply with certain conditions. There's a diversion program that the courts can assist in facilitating, and that's where the Department of Justice would play a critical role if the magistrate gets to understand the crime associated with substance abuse, but not the people, the dealer, but rather the people that are abusing substances, and that those people can be diverted to community programs. But treatment is given within the community itself, and the person is then able to adjust to that kind of environment without having to go through halfway houses and other expensive ways of treatment. And then there's also prescription of services and conditions for the registration of such services. And then applications to the Director General for the registration of services. And then because this is important, that all services that are rendered within the community, especially treatment services, need to be registered so that you prevent the abuse of people in this facility. I mean, in the community. Then Chapter 5 deals with center-based and outpatient services. And as I indicated, outpatient services would actually be part of the community-based services because they are services that are rendered by an institution to the people that are in that vicinity around the institution. And with the purpose for which people are admitted to treatment centers, deals with the reception of people in treatment centers, treatment including skills training and to perform duties and functions as prescribed in those treatment centers. And what we are proposing here is that there should be, you know, other than that, just the focus on the treatment of the person for substance abuse, that they can even some skills as well, so that when they move out back into the community, they are able to utilize those skills effectively and be able to really become productive citizens in society. And deals with the establishment and abolition of public treatment centers and halfway houses. And then staffing of public treatment centers and halfway houses, conditions for the registration of private treatment centers and halfway houses, and cancellation of such registration. And then it also deals with compliance with conditions for registration and remedies for non-compliance. And Chapter 5 deals with center-based services and outpatient services. Monitoring and assessment of private treatment centers and halfway houses, establishment of outpatient services by the minister, types of outpatient services, including early, including prevention, early intervention, and holistic treatment services. For example, through care family program, that when you don't look just at an individual, but you see the individual in the context of the family, and you actually address this, you know, the individual and the family in a holistic way. And then dealing with children that are addicted to substance abuse. And these children are dealt with in terms of the Children's Act, so there's cross-referencing with the Children's Act in this regard. And then conditions for the appointment and neutralization of volunteers and the provision of services. And then Chapter 6 deals with aftercare and the integration, which is one of the areas that are really not given attention at this stage. That once the person is discharged from treatment, whether it's community level or in an institution, very little aftercare and returns integration takes place to assist the person to adapt to community life and to stay sober and for the rest of their life. This chapter looks then at the establishment of aftercare and reintegration program, which must focus on the successful reintegration of abusers into society, the workforce, family, and community life. The programs must allow service users interaction with other service users, their families, and communities. And there are programs like this, but they are not available in all the communities. For instance, with the AA and some such organizations, Al-Anon and so on, that build our backend services and actually help the users to stay sober. And then promote the design of specific aftercare and relapse prevention programs, allow service users to share long-term sobriety experiences through support groups, for instance, promote group cohesion among service users, enable service users to abstain from substance abuse, that the programs must be well structured and based on individual treatment plans, must also promote evidence-based HIV prevention programs, in particular focus on relapsing substance abusers. And then TAPSIS continues, also deals with accreditation of programs. Accreditation of programs in terms of prescribed norms and standards and establishment of support groups that assist service users to maintain access. Chapter 7 deals with admission, transfer, and retransfer of patients. And this focuses on the application and admission of voluntary service users to a treatment center, admission of involuntary service users to a treatment center by way of prescribed procedures for such admission and treatment. Voluntary service users are those service users that go for treatment voluntarily, and those that are involuntary are the ones that often go by way of a court order that they report to the prosecutor or the social worker, and then preparations are then made or court written by a social worker and submitted to the prosecutor, who must then see to it that the person gets admitted to a treatment facility. It prescribes conditions under which an involuntary person may be admitted or user may be admitted on submission of an affidavit to the effect that a person is dependent on substances of abuse and is a danger to himself or herself or to the immediate environment, or may cause a major health risk because of being dependent on substance abuse, that in any manner does harm to his own welfare and the welfare of his or her family or others. The person commits a criminal act or acts to sustain his or her abuse of substances, and it also deals with court-ordered admissions, as I indicated, to treatment centers. As I indicated, that we would also deal with the people that are abusing substances, committing crimes related to substance abuse, that those people be committed to treatment centers in lieu of a sentence for an offense committed, even if it's a criminal offense, if it's related to substance abuse, and it's a minor offense, that the person can be sent for committed to a treatment center. That postponement of the order of the court conditional upon supervision and treatment of that person, that the court can postpone an order in relation to that person upon based on the supervision and treatment of that person. So during that period that they receive treatment, they would have to be or maybe that they are committed to a treatment center in lieu of a sentence, they would have to be supervised both during the treatment program and afterwards. And it also deals with court-ordered admissions to treatment centers, transfer of involuntary service users from correctional facilities and other alternative care services to public treatment centers in terms of relevant legislation. For instance, if people are found to be dependent on substances and they're in a correctional facility, they can be referred to a treatment center. And this section provides for the leave of absence from treatment centers and release on license and revocation conditions under which these licenses may be revoked. And then the issue around admission of foreigners into treatment centers. We have found that quite a lot of people from other countries, including Europe and the US and so on, come to South Africa for treatment and actually a lot of the private treatment centers, and there are no arrangements between the different governments on these on these types of you know people that come to us, you know, to the country. So we thought that it would be important for us to actually regulate this and make sure that it's done through the proper channel. Chapter 8, Joseph, the media manager.
Are the international agreements in this regard, should we as South Africa adopt any of those?
No, there are no international agreements in this relation. Yeah, I mean, in relation to this. So what we are saying is just to provide for the fact that the person can't just come through to the treatment center without actually going through the appropriate channels reporting us as infected. But there are no agreements really directly relating to the treatment of people in our treatment facilities at this point. Behavior management and disciplinary intervention. I think this is a very critical area because it relates to disciplinary procedures in facilities and really give guidelines in terms of how people must be disciplined or disciplined must be maintained in such facilities. And it's a very thin line between maintaining discipline and actually violating the rights of people. And members will know of the situations that we've had, for instance, in the Northern Cape, where people are actually, you know, or rather where their rights are really violated. But this gives guidance then to the maintenance of discipline in treatment centers, halfway houses, and
outpatients. Maybe on that point, I can just indicate the community versus at NOPUA. Obviously, we had our own impressions of what happens in NOPUA, our take on that situation. At some point, I think we'll go back to the committee's report on the oversight budget that we did last year, which report is still battling to find its way through Parliament, as I said earlier. But we'll deal with that.
It's going to be very interesting, Chairperson, because my experience personally with that facility is that it can actually, the visits sometimes are stage managed. And it also, this chapter then provides guidelines and procedures for the behavior management and disciplinary intervention in all the facilities, and it prescribes disciplinary procedures to be followed and deals with measures for the management of absconders. That if a person absconds from a treatment center, how should people be dealt with? There are, Chairperson, areas that we really did not go into detail on in the presentation, but all the chapters that relate to services, we really look at the establishment and development of such services, minimum norms and standards for such service, for service delivery, accreditation processes for service for services and service providers, looks at issues around staffing, monitoring and evaluation, relocation, revocation of licenses and closure of facilities, whether they are community-based facilities or center-based facilities, and then offences and penalties. These run across all the service-related chapters that we just discussed. And then we have an additional chapter, and chapter 9, which is on the Central Drug Authority, and establishment, this talks to the establishment and functions of such a body and its supporting structures, powers and duties of the CDA and its supporting structures, compliance with the implementation of the National Drug Master Plan by all stakeholders. Chapter 10 deals with monitoring and evaluation, and then chapter 11 deals with general provisions, offenses and penalties, delegations, transitional provisions, regulations, repeal of laws and statements, and then short title and commencement. Chair, when we really, after we had discussions with you on this matter in the informal briefing, we actually, as I indicated, look at the chapter on community-based services, and we have drafted that, and the traditional leaders are provided for in the, particularly in the function of in the function of local drug action committees. We have provided, as per the request of the portfolio committee, the roles and challenges of relevant government departments and structures in relation to this bill. And we also have provided to you a copy of the bill, the report of the costing of the bill. And Chair, I just want to bring to your attention that there are new inputs that were raised by the CDA just recently. That will have an impact on the legislation, and I must say that it just came at a much later stage, and so I'm just sensitizing the committee to this and the city industry for itself. That has been, thank you. I think we will be ready, and the team will assist with the questions. I hope so. Yes.
All right. I was hoping that at this juncture we could have a tea break, but apparently the request has not been forwarded to the relevant service provider. So I don't know how soon that error will be corrected. I, for one, would do a little bit for this stretch. I think that's just an overview of the bill. Just to mention that apparently we have had a very thin response from the invitation that we issued through the media for public comment on the bill. I understand from the committee secretary that it's about 5 people in relation to the I don't know how many of those have indicated that they would want to actually make oral presentations next week. But I've also requested the researcher to look at the report, our report on the bill, and try and extract key observations that we made, issues that were raised by the centers themselves, so that we can get the department to actually respond to some of those issues, and we could also look at how those relate to the book. So that's just the one aspect that I thought I needed to raise. But I was just thinking aloud that whilst we still have this week, maybe we could try and improvise and use the department's own network with stakeholders in the domestic area to bring their attention to the notice that was issued in the media inviting public hearing. And depending on how the committee feels, to see if we can give them a further extension maybe until Friday or so, and see if some might want to take advantage of that opportunity to revert back to us. But that is in brief where we are, and the presentation has been. I was just wondering, the draft that came from Cabinet was, to my memory, a much thicker document compared to the one that comes through. Or is it just because of the print having been condensed? The formatting. All right. I thought maybe the state law advisor would chuck that. All right. Magumede, let me open for initial comments whilst we are awaiting to hear what is happening with the team to members of the committee. We have Marco Mede and then Sample after that. And then Nostalgia after that. All right? In that order. Marco Mede. Your mic, please.
Thank you, Chair.
All right.
I was just saying, right through this presentation, it has been, we are told how these things are going to be done, the facilities, the what, the opening of it, the closing of it, the delivery of what. But there is nowhere, Chairperson, in the bill, but if I'm out of order, you rule me out of order, Chair. There is nowhere in this whole thing where the department could say, after 6 months, a certain facility will be reporting to say, we have gone from this point to this point. Maybe they had, let us say, 20 people to say 10 of them are correct. One doesn't want to go back. And then the other 9, we are still struggling. Are there not going to be any reports of how they are doing? Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you.
How they call you.
All right. Ms. Sampo?
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the department for this initial report on the bill. I've got two questions. The first one's on the financial implications of the bill. On page 4, we talk about the costing being done on 3 levels, conservative, intermediate, and the aggressive implementation. There's the 3 scenarios. Then on page 5, we get given the costing, but it doesn't say on which scenario it is based. The speaker did say that she forwarded the financial report to the committee, which I haven't seen. So I'd just like to know which basis, which scenario it is, whether it's conservative, intermediate, or aggressive, because obviously that's quite important just to know what that costing is. And then in Chapter 5, we talk about outpatients and we talk about people. In Chapter 6, we talk about service
users.
Can
we just check where this report is that's currently been forwarded?
The financial
report. It is a costing, a report on the cost of the bill. All right. Where is it? Lana,
yeah. If I can clarify, at the initial briefing on the 27th...
You can use the nearest mic.
No, you can hear me. Mm-hmm. At the brief...
I think we can record it. Okay. All right.
At the briefing on the 27th of February, the initial briefing, the department included a very comprehensive stack of information relevant to this. It included the latest National Drug Master Plan. It included the policy on substance abuse services. It included the minimum norms and standards. And it included a CD version of a costing report. The department may have to elaborate on this costing, to unpack it. But I don't have so many copies thereof, but to my records, those were the supplementary supporting documents which were made available to the committee and the secretary on that day. Thanks.
I think we may need at some point to go into each of those key documents because that would give us the best sense of what all this jargon is all about. Prevention programs. What are the prevention programs? What exactly do they? How do they prevent? Diverting young people from drugs into other more constructive kind of activities. Who's going to do that? I suppose social development doesn't have the budget to build sports facilities and all the dance clubs and all those things. So I know that the chief director alluded to us mentioning the Arts and Council for Arts and Culture. What's their role in this? Do we know exactly what it is they're going to do in relation to this? This prevention, what does it entail actually? How do you stop people from using drugs? How do you stop young people? In in fact, I wanted to also check what's the relationship between this legislative arrangement, which I in my own language would call the demand side, one way to use the economic concept, the demand side of the equation. What's the relationship between this and the supply side of the equation? The whole issue of the criminalization element and the control of peddling or proliferation of drugs. Who's going to talk to us about that aspect? Does this bill have anything to do with it or nothing to do with it? If it has anything to do with it, what's it, in what way does it have anything to do with it? I'm not sure which legislation currently outlaws narcotics. I'm sure that there are international agreements insofar as the supply side is concerned. Is it something that does not concern us? And if not, who does it concern? Shouldn't we have some kind of an indication? In our visits out to the community, the young people were saying, look, he gets sick in the next street corner, no problem, you know. The police come there and you see them sitting, drinking, whatever, with the drug peddlers, no problem, you know. Is this bill saying anything about that? Maybe the CDA will tell us what they're doing about that. I understand the police about it. But let's first get all the members to ask the question. Oh, you had to. All right. Okay. Let's give you the full space and time to complete your question.
Thank you, Chair.
But I'll take responses only at the end after all members have asked their questions.
Thank you. Right. Lana is correct. We did get all those CDs. But I'd just like to know in what is presented here. What is that figure based on? Which scenario? And then chapter 5, we talk about outpatients and people. Chapter 6, we talk about service users, which is defined in the definitions in the bill. And we also, in chapter 6, referral is made to substance abusers, which is going to be the term that we're going to use, because I think that's very important as to how we define the so-called people, substance abuser, whatever.
Consistency of language.
Yes. And it's very important for, I think, for this committee as to how we view people who are using substances. Are they outpatients or are they substance abusers? So I'd like some clarity on that. Thank you.
Okay, I have Ms. Sample, and then I'll have Ms. Weber, and then I'll have Ms. Bandimande. All right? Sorry, I mean Ms. Dartley. Sorry, how do I do this to you? You see, she has a lot of influence on me.
In my mind, when we looked at the prevention of substance abuse, went to just like who's the onus on, and as you were saying, where's it going to lie in terms of the implementation? And because we've had so much experience with who's got the budget and when it goes to provinces, how will it actually be spent? Have we, you know, as I'm looking at this on the surface now, I'm sort of seeing that this could be bounced all over the place, and it looks beautiful, and but perhaps there's nowhere that it's really tied down to having to be implemented. So there's a lot more we could sort of say on that. And then the other thought that crossed my mind as well is that obviously when a crime has been committed, there will be free service. But when a crime hasn't been committed, it's not likely to be that free. We don't want a situation where people having to commit crimes to be able to get the drugs and sort of help. So, you know, there's just a lot of things we need to sort of grapple with. I don't know, perhaps you can start answering some of that thing.
All right, Ms. Weber.
Thank you, Chair. As far as I know, there is no convention. There are various conventions, but there's no convention regarding drugs. Maybe South Africa should take the initiative, not a convention, the International Convention Against Drugs. We spoke about institutions, and we all know
we're quite influential internationally. Mm-hmm. Just been chairing the Security Council.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you are. So there we've got a good platform.
Sure, could initiate something. All right.
Okay. Now, we all know the famous no person. What happens? We mustn't shy away from the fact that they do have very good success rates. However, probably how they do it is not very conventional. So, is it necessary?
We definitely going to discuss it in court.
Well, is
we'll
it
see what our finding of no person.
But is it necessary when we do oversight that we have to announce ourselves? I mean, why can't the whole committee just pitch up then? So, I mean, you know, this is something that I find has been happening to various committees. You announce yourself and you have all pomp and glory and cookies and coffee and all everything's beautiful. Mm-hmm. But if you land up there unannounced,
you can't just pitch up at no court. You have to make profiling. Is that all, Ms. Weaver? All right.
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Zimande?
Thanks, Chair. I think I wanted to just make an emphasis on what, in following on what Mr. Sample has just said in terms of the inconsistency of the language and grammatical errors. You know, Chair, how it plunged us into crisis last year with the children's bill. And we emphasized this in the informal briefing session that we had in February. And I need to verify, Chair, I heard the presenter talking about some other things that they couldn't, that were raised in that briefing, but couldn't be taken in, that they might be brought in.
Leaking in of things.
That one, Chair, I don't know, maybe she could tell more about what are those things and why we're not included then in the thing that is certified.
They didn't sneak them in before cabinet. Now they want to sneak it in.
Yeah, Chair, because then that's going to cause again these bureaucratic problems that we had last year with the children's bill, when the committee session said that's not the version that came in the state law. One of them is that these are not the amendments. It's just cosmetic. What this? Cosmetic. What that? So, Chair, I'm just saying, having a concern, and I think we need to, this one needs to, we need to get it right from the beginning, making sure that we do that. The minor one, Chair, would to check it out. What's going to be the other language of the of the bill besides English? Thanks, Chair.
Apparently, the department hasn't translated yet, and need to tell us by when Parliament is going to get the translation. You know, the rigmarole, you know, the new rule that we passed in Africa. Can I, just on that issue about the processing of the bill, to say that the program that we put together for the first time in the committee processing of the bill is that we're going to pass the bill and report on it and send it off for Prince's group. But we are going to sit again as the committee and formally approve the printed proof, the version that would be coming from the printer, which is something that we used not to do in the past. So that what we approve, what goes to the House is what we have approved finally. Because last year we had this situation. There's this thing called what is it called? The A list, which is simply this. You pass a bill as the committee with amendments. All right? So the bill that the minister introduces in the House, you go as a committee, you sit down and you say, we're changing this and that. What you're changing is called amendment. All right? You pass it in the committee. Then the state law advisors and the committee section go back and put together a list of amendments called the A list, which gets forwarded together with the bill to the print. Now, a lot of, I won't use the sweet language there, but a lot of things can go wrong and do go wrong there. All and that's what happens with the children. Alright? Such that the state law advisor compiles the list and says, this is what the committee approved or decided as amendments to the bill. And the committee section says, no, that is not what the committee decided. And then there's this rigmarole back and forth between them. And of course, if that A list does not include a comma or a full stop, then the final text will not have the comma anymore. Then that needs to be corrected. Then suddenly a capital letter has not been included in the A list that was supposed to have been included. And so that's what happened. So what we've decided this time around, and this is going to be challenging because it means that the bill is going to go away, get printed, we come back again and we find that there are errors, correct them, send it back to the printer. We'll have to come back again to approve the bill. I'm not sure with the congested program that we have, how we're going to do that. So the sooner we get to that stage of saying we're done with the bill, the better. Now, as far as the, what do you call it, the amendment stage is concerned, I hope that firstly we're not going to have a situation like this last week, where we start with one state law advisor, they leave us in the middle somewhere, get a new state law advisor, leave us in the middle somewhere, get a set state law advisor who's never done a bill before in her life to come and deal with a bill that's very long and very complex. You know, and expect miracles from her. I mean, all of this things is just unreasonable. And so on and so forth. So I'm glad Parliament has sent a legal advisor to work with us from day one. I hope they're not going to fall through the crack somewhere along the way. So I'm just making this thing upfront. That if these things are not going to be in place, if the committee gets into another embarrassing situation, like the one we had last year. Parliament must take the blame for it.
And the consequences.
Then I as chair get told on the eve of the debate that there are problems. When 2 weeks had lapsed of backwards and forwards between the printers and the state law advice and the committee section that I'm not party to. And for heaven's sake, I'm told I'm sharing with committee. Why can't I know that there are problems? You know, until on the eve of the debate. All right? But I'll leave it at that. Okay, questions have been asked. I'm told she will be ready at 12:15. Let's just have the responses and go straight into she, and then we'll look at how we proceed from there.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, on the first question that was raised by Honourable Member who made it, the report from facilities and how that control is going to be maintained. The legislation provides for the registration of facilities, and the procedure there is that once a facility is registered, then there are certain conditions that are placed on it that they have to comply with. And it's the department's responsibility to then conduct inspections to ensure that the facility complies with those regulations or with those conditions. And this is also related to the norms and standards that will be developed for each of the service areas. Those norms and standards actually prescribe what has got to be done, what's got to be in place, and the department then has to do the monitoring to ensure that on a regular basis those facilities comply with those norms and standards. So where much as we don't go into specifics, but there are sections in the legislation under each area where it talks about compliance with norms and standards and the fact that it should be the responsibility. I mean, failure to comply with those norms and standards will have certain implications. for the facility.
On that point?
Yes.
I'm trying to just get them to make an initial quick response, and then we'll have another round because the tea is getting cold. No, I'm not taking follow-ups now. We'll do follow-ups after tea.
Okay.
All right.
And, Chair, with regard to the financial implications, I did indicate that the preliminary financial implication of the bill is based on the costing of on the third scenario, which is the aggressive implementation, and in the initial phase is the amount, and then the transitional phase and its full implementation. But that's actually
that
scenario.
Answers her question. But the question, which of the scenarios have been accepted by Treasury?
Well, Treasury will accept the minimal one. I think it's progressively
realization. Let me not give a bad example. making follow-up questions. Okay, any other?
And in relation to definition and consistency in the use of terminology, I think it's a matter that we have to look at once more. I can only respond in terms of our patients, because people that are utilizing the outpatient services would be abused service users, because we generally shouldn't be talking about substance abusers. We talk about service users. But I think it's something that we have to look at and check and just make sure that we are consistent in terms of the way we utilize services. I'm sure my colleagues here will assist in that regard, the legal section in this part.
Thank you, Chair. We'll try. There are a number of questions which were asked. The first one is on, I think my colleague dealt with that one, on whether or not there are any reports that are required. I was not quite sure whether I understood the question correctly. But if you look at section 16.2 and 17.1, it does make provision for reports to be provided for on request by the minister, by those who are managing the centre. So,
No, I think it's more concerned about all the programs and facilities that you're saying are going to set up and so on, whether we shouldn't have some kind of regular reporting on progress that's being made in actual realization of those things, so that we know whether these things are just on paper or whether they're actually coming into existence. Unless I myself am not understanding what she said, which is not so much concerned about internally what is happening, even the service, the existence of the service for that matter, is it happening on paper?
Again, to highlight the current practice, is that we normally give them registration for a period of 5 years, but during that 5 years, there are regular inspections that are conducted in that facility to ensure that there is compliance with whatever condition. So maybe it might not be well.
I should still make a follow-up if she wants to. Let's not belabor the answer to go to tea.
Okay.
The other question related to whether or not this bill deals with the suppliers of drugs. It does not necessarily deal with the suppliers of drugs. But I think, speaking subject to correction, I think there's an international convention on drug trafficking. I'm going to try and look at it in a short minute. But other than that, there's even national legislation that deals with drug trafficking. So this bill would not necessarily be dealing with drug trafficking.
So we'll come back to it, but
okay.
What we're interested to know, has the department applied its mind to the current regulatory framework dealing with prevention of the proliferation of violence. And even if this is not dealing with that topic directly, to look at the synergy between the demand side, which is what this is about, and the supply side, which is what that legislation is about. But we'll come back to that. Your response to that question.
There's another question relating to, and I think it's also been impacting around the definition of inconsistency. I think, Chair, you recall that yesterday over the phone we discussed this, and I said there are certain things that I thought you needed to bring to your attention before you pick them up. So I think you were hoping that you won't pick them up before you bring them to your attention. But,
and please don't bring them up once we have voted on the bill and
no, not being
because that. That will make us very, very angry. We'll actually apply for you to all be fine this time around.
We'll try and work around your energy.
We don't bring to go through the embarrassment that we have.
Okay. Those things we're hoping to have a meeting sometime around this week with my colleagues to try and find out before you hold on to this. Another issue, I'm not sure, Chair, how you were making a reference to the AD bill. My understanding is that if you work on the amendments and you do the A list bill, you need to come before the committee and read each and every change so that the committee must say whether or not it is happy with those amendments before they could go and print it. It shouldn't be that it's printed and then you later realize this is not what we should have come. So I thought that what needs to happen is that we work with the state law advisor on the A list and we come before this committee to read each and every amendment that is going to be made, and that should be what is going to be printed by people responsible for printing it.
Well, we get the state law advisor to talk to it, but my understanding is that even after you've done that, you still go and in handwritten form, go and write those amendments, and that handwritten piece of paper ultimately is what goes. It's not the version that the committee actually passed that goes to the print. But let's not belabor it. At some point, we'll probably just talk about the processing of legislation in this country and look at some of the challenges associated with that. We'll get to that point when we're getting input from the state law advisor. Yes,
I hear what you're saying, but what you say makes sense to me. That we come together, go through the whole thing, so that when eventually it goes to the printer, at least most of, we don't want that pin and pop issue that happened with the last children's film. Jump, we were told to jump, and we had to jump as high as we could. Imagine me jumping.
No, in fact, our decision is to take it further than that. We are saying that even after we have approved that A-list or whatever you call it.
Following the modus operandi that he has.
No, even after, we're taking it even further than that. We're saying even after that, after it has been actually printed by the printer, the printed version must come back for formal approval. And if the error in the print, we must take it back to the printers ourselves until we're satisfied with the final text, which is the version that's going to be before the 400 members of the assembly. All right. Okay, let's leave that one at that. Okay.
The last one, Chair, it was in relation to the language in which, the second language in which the bill would be translated.
Yeah.
Ms. Willem-Zoppo, I think about 2 months or so ago, indicated to me there was a meeting, I don't know where the decision was taken, where it was decided that the bill must be translated into Botswana. The bill is currently being translated by the Department of Arts and Culture. The undertaking is that by the end of May, they would have finalized the translation, because we indicated that we want it by that time. So But what we also said, because what we also realized was that it was quite, I mean, we received some requests to also translate it into other African languages, or even in Afrikaans. But then I had a discussion with Ms. Nchabu, so maybe the best would be to have, although it may not be in the form of a bill, but to have some form of a bill translated into a majority of languages so that people can be able to read it.
The popular version of it.
Yeah, where everyone can read it from a layperson's point of view. That is a matter that we discussed, but I don't think a final decision was taken, but it could help in terms of making...
What language are you saying you're translating it into?
It has been translated into Botswana.
Botswana. Yes. Are you speaking Botswana?
I do speak Botswana, but I didn't take the decision.
Okay. I think on this note we're going to take a body break and have a quick one, 10 minutes, I think it's okay, time, and then let's proceed from there. Thank you. Looks like it's a committee of my own.
How are you?
Go back to home affairs now.
Yeah.
much time did we extra time did we allocate ourselves, because we're going to be deducted from our lunch time. The single lunch today. Oh, venue. CDA is going to meet a moody committee in the afternoon. So you must ready yourself for the mood in the afternoon. All right. Yes, we said we're going to entertain follow-up after tea, and this is the turn. I know Ms. Dudley has an interest in following up on some issues. Let me take this first, and then we can get to the other people who want to follow.
Okay.
Can I, at some point, I saw hands from members of the CDA. It's not only the department that may respond to issues. The CDA is equally entitled to respond to issues that the committee raises, even before your formal presentation. So feel free to respond later to any of the issues. Ms. Dudley?
I must have tripped out for a moment because I never heard any response to my issues around does the bill tie anybody in at any place. And then sort of obviously...
The bill doing what?
Does it tie anybody in to actually implement or put
the
in...
The mic then goes off.
When it's money, so it's obviously someone from the treasury. In view of the kind of problems we have with the implementation of particularly all our legislation when it comes to a provincial level, just wondering if this bill looks at those issues at all. But then when you were speaking about the monitoring, your response I heard, but what we probably want to know is if this bill actually ties the department into any kind of time frame or when it will be monitoring, whether it will be monitoring. Because in the children's in our children's act, it does. There's very clear specifics around it. And then just a thought on the service user issue. Obviously, when there's voluntary service users, if we understand, but is there any time where, for example, if a person is diagnosed as a substance abuser, can that person be sent as an involuntary? Voluntary, do they have to commit a crime
person?
Just trying to see if there's.
Well, they'll respond directly. All right, any other follow up? Any takers? All right. Look, I need to get a sense at this preliminary stage as to which departments are directly responsible for the implementation of which aspect of this bill other than the Department of Social Development. I know that there was a thing with health leading to cabinet, which obviously was resolved, otherwise cabinet wouldn't have passed. So one assumes that the delineation of the role of health on the one hand and social development on the other has been resolved, and I just need to get a sense of, get more details around that. And beyond health, which other departments? Talked of art and culture, I'm not sure exactly in the context of this book what programs exactly you expect in art and culture to be going to implement. And what's the other one, HIV and AIDS Council? We all know that the syringes that get used invariably also transmit HIV and so on. But it's not up to me to identify the exact linkage between HIV and AIDS and what this bill do. I think we need specifics. We need to know exactly what is it that connects HIV and AIDS to this bill very directly, but also in terms of the AIDS Council, what is the role of the relationship with the bill? Then I would expect us to go back in some detail to the issue I raised earlier. The synergy between the supply side and the demand side. I think we need to resolve the policy issues at the preliminary stage to understand, you know, because like I said earlier, and we look at the report of the committee in appropriate time. Some of the young people that we met said, these drugs are so freely available, and that's where the problem is. So you can't talk of prevention without talking about the supply side and how that gets dealt with. Is it something that this committee should not concern itself about? And if so, in the context of this law, what is the image? I'm not sure whether the department has actually gone through the relevant legislation and international agreements, which we may or may not have signed, and looked at exactly what are those pieces of legislation and international agreements actually saying about curbing the proliferation of drugs, and what is it that we can do in the context of this bill to reinforce that area of work. Right. So I really want us to get very elaborate, if you like. Can present a thesis on the issue, that's fine. But I don't want you know, one-word answer to this kind of question, because they're not one-word challenge. All right. They lie at the heart of it. All right. Okay, I didn't see any further indication of follow-up, so I'll allow responses. Weber, I interpreted. All right. Okay. Does the department want to respond first, or the people from the CDA? Is there somebody? Yes, I saw you had your hand up. I can't remember your name again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. David Baeva. I'm the Deputy Chairperson of the Central Drug Authority. And at the outset, may I please just bring our best greetings, the best greetings from our chairperson. Unfortunately, Mr. McCready is a member of the Department of Foreign Affairs and spends a lot of time overseas, and that is the reason why he's not here with us again. So, with his best wishes, we were here to represent him as well. In response to the questions that you yourself have raised, we have prepared a presentation which will deal this afternoon and will take into account all of the areas that you have actually asked. The mandate of the Central Drug Authority is what needs to be explained in full in order to actually address the concerns that you have raised. And we will do so this afternoon in our presentation, sir. Thank you.
I like the sound of that. All right. Any other responses on any other issues raised in that decision?
The first question is related to the funding for the implementation of the bill at a provincial level. Actually, what we are finding is that we're more likely to obtain funding for provinces if there's legislation that goes with service delivery. So what we would do normally is that once this legislation is approved, then we go to Treasury and request funding, because there are things that are provisions of the legislation that are obligatory that we have to implement. And in that way, Treasury is more inclined to allocate funding. But I think the issue still remains, and it's an issue that is a constitutional issue, that, you know, ultimately, even if you go Treasury, because we normally look for funding from Treasury, but at the end of the day, it goes into the big pockets of the provinces, and it's up to provinces then to
lobby for that funding in their own provincial treasuries. That problem will still remain. And then to which provinces do this differ, you know, from province to province. So there are no guarantees that provinces will actually go out and do this. But it's something that we work on jointly with them. What the national department has done now is that we're working with the provinces to define priorities so that we have the same priorities. And we then agree that these are the national priorities, so that when we go to treasury and request funding, there's also an agreement that at the provincial level, we have all prepared the business plan to assist provincial provincial departments to submit those business plans to or business plans to the provincial treasuries with the hope that they will get funding. But otherwise, it's a matter that's decided by the provincial
leaders. How often do you visit each province? Once a year or twice a year? I'm asking this question because if ultimately the spending happens in the province, it means that, you know, that's where the party takes place. And if you're going to be spending most of your time in Pretoria, far away from where the party is, obviously you're going to miss out on the all the goodies that are being served today. So my concern really is, we constantly get this report that, well, it's up to the provinces to decide what we're going to spend their money on and all of that. Treasury, when they came here to us last year, and before we adjourn, I'm going to ask the Secretary to read out the recommendations of the committee in its report on Vote 17 on the Biden last year, which I'm going to be tabling in the House tomorrow. I'll give a 5 minute input in the House on it, which was supposed to have been passed a year ago, so that it should have been implemented a year down the line. But thanks to the process in Parliament, we're only going to pass that report after we've finished hearings on this year's budget. Right. But you see, one of the issues that comes out there is the whole issue of coordination between spheres around the budget process. Now, Treasury, when they came to us last year, when we were asking them on the costing of the children's program, they said, the problem is not money. They said, the money is there. The problem is that children don't even have the capacity to ask for it, let alone to spend it. Now, I can just blame the provinces, you know. Where was national there? Where was national? When provinces couldn't put forward, you know, effective requests for funding. Otherwise, what's our role as nationals? All right? So if we're going to sit in Pretoria and be comfortable and have sit behind our computers there and we don't probably go down to the provinces where the money gets spent and sit down with those officials who apparently don't have enough capacity to ask for the money, and help them to ask for the money, nothing is going to happen, you see. So I'm going to be literally asking for an itinerary, what do you call it in English? A schedule of a day-to-day activity that must show me how many times you've been to province X and province Y, and what did you do to assist them to get this money out of the provincial treasuries and from national treasuries and everywhere else, so that the money actually ultimately comes out and goes into the program. This is one of the things that we're going to do if we find time as a committee in our current life. If you go and visit this province and sit down with them and just check for ourselves, you know, what's happening there. You know, I don't think we should wait for the provincial legislature to help us. But yeah, so we really need to zoom into this issue. Where are the problems? Where are the capacity problems? You know, clearly this area has received very little funding in the broader scheme of things. And what is the plan to expand the funding for this area? And I think those are the concerns that we have. But yes, I interjected you in your response. I'm very bad man.
I think, Chair, maybe just to indicate that, as I indicated, that this matter is really receiving a serious attention from the National Department, both in terms of just assisting our strategic planning unit with works with provinces now, you know, on the priorities that have been defined by the National Department. In fact, the priorities that are now done jointly, and business cases are prepared, you know, to assist provinces to look for additional funding. And we also have provincial coordinators meetings where we sit jointly with provincial coordinators for each of the different programs that we have to actually look at some of the, you know, how they are implementing the programs you know, how they are progressing in whatever programs that they are working on. So it's something that is picking up quite slowly. It's not as well as, you know, it's not as going as well as we want to go. But we maybe, Chair, at some point I will come to the forum to come and make a presentation on the norms and standards for social worker services, because the issue is also the issue around measurement. To what extent do we measure the services? We've got all these policies, but how do we measure the services if we don't have the norms and standards? That process is started, and I can come and make a presentation to the forum at the appropriate time. But coming back to the issue, Chair, that honourable member that you raised, the issue of admission and that people, it seems that people can only be admitted if they commit crimes. The legislation makes provision for voluntary service users, those who actually go there for treatment, present themselves for treatment, but also those who are not doing that but are addicted to substances, or maybe are displaying certain symptoms that show that they are becoming addicted to substances. There's provision that is made in the legislation for them to get admitted to these facilities by way of, for instance, it can be referred to a social worker, and then, or anybody can come up with an affidavit that can then be presented to the prosecutor, and then the people can be committed to a treatment. So it makes a very adequate provision for those kinds of people. Yeah, I think the issue of connecting HIV and to substance abuse, I think that's an issue that the chairperson raised. I think maybe in terms of the trends again, that the CDA is going to present on, that will be illustrated. And Chair, what we have done is with all the structures, even with South African police services, we've had interactions with them in terms of what their role, how they see their role in the implementation of this bill, and how their own legislation impacts on the services that you provide. We have forwarded to the portfolio committee a document that actually indicates the responsibility, the roles and responsibility of each department in relation to the substance, to this program, and especially in relation to the bill, what role they will play in relation to the bill. I hope the members got that document. It was forwarded quite some time ago with the rest of their package that was forwarded to their portfolio committee. It goes into much detail in terms of, for instance, the role of the Department of Arts and Culture in providing recreational facilities, in making sure that we ensure alignment of programs. In fact, recently, even though there were some reservations about it, for instance, the whole hip hop campaign, hip hop being, used to convey appropriate messages that empower young people to
value their lives, to change their lifestyles, to through the medium that they understand, and the medium that is a partnership between the Department of Arts and Culture as well as the department. Those are the kinds of activities that are there that would ensure that we prevent substance abuse. So the Department of Correctional Services, and the fact that a lot of people are admitted in correctional facilities because of substance abuse, or rather, and in the, you know, they've committed serious and in some cases very serious crimes as a result of substance, and they themselves are addicted to substances, that they can then be, you know, exposed to treatment. And in fact, the Correctional Services Act, the pro one. I don't know which year it was. But it's very much related to this act. You know, there's synergies between that act and this particular act in terms of how do you treat people with substance abuse in correctional facilities, and then what happens when those people go out of those correctional facilities. So there's a whole document here. I don't want to really,
I think what we can do is that maybe we need to decide, because I wouldn't also want to unduly hold back the social assistance group tomorrow. And yet, I would want that legislation to get sufficient time so that we can dispose of it. But perhaps we'll see if there is still time this afternoon after we have dealt with the CDA. We could maybe make time and go back to that document, and actually, in the meantime, make sure that members bring their copies if they don't have. You know, arrangements are made for copies to be made for members. And really just go through each department's implications, because that would also assist us in planning, so that we decide which departments after the hearing we're going to call back here to talk to each other, so that we can start giving them notice early on. So let's try that. If time doesn't allow today, then we'll decide the end of the day when we can do that. It's one of the documents that were presented in a package where you did the formal presentation.
And no, as a follow-up, this was a follow-up to today.
Oh, right.
It came after that.
Let's get that document, the document on the costing. What was the other document? Yeah, the financial implications of the costing document. Lana, have I got all the documents?
Chair, I can go to my office and print the rules and clarifications. Just a two-pager. But just, the costing document is very comprehensive. I suggest that the department puts it on CD-ROM and flashes what
how many pages is it? Hundreds of pages?
It is a very comprehensive document.
Is there not summarized version of it? Is there no way that those documents can be made available by toward the end of the day? Let's do whatever we can do to at least have the one about the different roles of the various departments, so that at the end of deliberations with CDA, we can start looking at the other departments and how they are affected. All right?
This is a costing document.
I can see that. but there should be a way of alright. Well, in any case, members may need a copy of you see, we're not yet quite here yet. Some of us are still slowly getting there. So having it on CD is useful, but maybe we should find a way of getting copies for members. All right. Okay. Yeah, so that we'll work on that, and hopefully by the end of the PDF presentation we'll have some kind of document to work with. Especially the one on the different roles. So I think you're going to come back and give us a fuller input or presentation on the roles of a different department. Okay, members, my time says that it is about 12:30. Are there any other broad issues of clarity or specific questions of clarity that we still want the department to provide clarity on in relation to this law? Any takers?
Mm-hmm.
All right. It looks like we don't have any lunch. I don't want us to immediately go into the CDA input now. Do we want to resume earlier than 2 o'clock? Or exactly?
1 or 2? Should
some of us
have a few
It's the first day in Parliament, so maybe let me be flexible. I know you're still going to work into the late night in the next week, so let me be nice to you and day one. All right, well, like then I'll talk to you. Can we start moving in by 1:45 so that 2 we start from? The meal, I'm told it's finger lunch, so I assume it's somewhere, it's going to be somewhere else. Is it ready already? Zola.
It's
10 to 1 only. So you can go and take a body stretch and so on, and 10 to 1 will be back for your thank you. before we adjourn, I'm sorry. I had promised before we adjourn, I had promised that I was going to use this time to just remind you what were the recommendations that we made in our report on the 17th of March, which I'm going to be presenting tomorrow. Maybe I should use, I don't think it will take more than 5 minutes for the committee secretary to just read those out. But that report, it's available on the ATC of the 28th of March 2007, and maybe copies can be made available to all the members. But just read, because I think it touches on some of the issues we were talking about. Do you want to just quickly, sorry to interrupt your mind process, this is after the recommendation for the committee.
It says members of the committee will ask about this step in all the meetings with the relevant departments. 1, releasing the draft sexual offences bill to the public for discussion and consultation. Finalizing the content of the bill in accordance with the outcomes of the public consultation. Maintaining and strengthening the specialist sexual offences court.
Sorry, I think go to lines. Let me start this out. I think I've got the wrong document. There are a number of recommendations relating to the relationship between the provincial and the national sphere around the budget issues, issues relating to service delivery and coordination in terms of capacity building. So the kind of things that we're talking about, and I don't know what that means, but I just need to double check. I think it's two reports. So you were reading the communication from the second report. I don't know what that means. Okay. Let's again. I'll try and find out what's happening and we'll come back.
Well, yeah, that's what that's going to be.